Hey, babe.
It's Aisha. Christina. Nice to meet you.
This is Quality Queen Control.
What is happening?
Hey guys, I am here with a very special guest. She is my first guest of my series that is called Who or What Was Your Yes? And this was actually inspired by my experience in Podcast Movement Evolutions, where a guest came on, or an award winner came on, I guess I should say. And he came on stage and he said, listen, I'm not here to talk about myself. I'm here to ask you who or what was your yes. And instantly in that moment, I knew who my yeses were. So I thought it would be really fun to incorporate having guests and asking them about their story. Because so many times we don't know what creator stories actually may be. So let's get into Les before we actually officially introduce her. Les is the founder and host of Balanced Black Girl. Yes, girl. That Les is on my podcast. Okay. An online wellness community and podcast focused on mind, body, health, habits, spacious productivity, financial wellness, and self-care. Her mission is to help others create nourishing habits that help them create the necessary space to live their best lives. And since launching in 2018, Balanced Black Girl has garnered over 7 million downloads, okay? And she has over 1,000 five-star reviews and has been featured by Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And you guys can check the show notes down below for all of Les's social media. Les, welcome to Quality Queen Control.
Hello, lovely. Thank you for having me.
Les and I, how we met, was actually in Vegas at Podcast Movement. And I mean, wow. Can I just say, and I mentioned this to you while we were in Vegas, she looks identical to one of my best friends. And my best friend, Justine, she sees it. And so I have like, it sounds weird, but I have like a little obsession.
No. So what's so funny is when you showed me pictures of your best friend, I was like, she looks like a younger version of my mom.
Uh-huh.
Like she looks so much like my mom did when my mom was younger. So I could totally see that. Mm-hmm. I think just because I'm so close to my mom, I like saw more of my mom and like her cheekbones. And I was like, wait, but I see it. Like we look related.
Yes. You guys absolutely look related. So I just have an obsession with you, especially because of that. I'm like, I'm telling my best friend, Justine, I'm like, Justine, do you see it? This is crazy. This girl looks just like you. And I'm like, you guys even dress the same. That's what's even weirder. It's absolutely crazy. So Les, first question I want to ask you is, how did you come to terms with the fact that you wanted to start social media? What does that journey look like of how you even came up with the idea, the inspiration of how you wanted to get on social media?
Yeah. Well, I'll say I've been in this game for a minute. So I first started creating content in 2014, and I started off as a wellness blogger way back then. And back then, a lot of people had platforms that were either more centralized on either having a blog or having a YouTube channel, and social media was something you did to kind of support that. So that was how I got started. My blog was the main thing, and then I had my social media channels to kind of support the blog. And then as time went on, social media started to become the main thing for me and a lot of other creators. But I got started because I had become really obsessed with wellness towards the end of college, and in the time right after college, I was not a very healthy person in my adolescence. Intentional exercise, not something I did. Eating healthy, not something I did. And I kind of stumbled upon the wellness space when I was just looking for more energy. I was looking to feel a bit more vibrant. I'd entered the workforce and I realized how much being sedentary and sitting at a desk just didn't feel good in my body. And I was like, I am 20 and I feel 60 and something is wrong here. So what can I do to get some energy? If I need to eat vegetables, I'll do it. If I need to work out, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have people in my life who were very interested in that at all. Mm-hmm. And so I went online to find information and to connect with people who were interested. And I became really obsessed with wellness blogs. And after a few years of reading wellness blogs, I was like, wait, I can do this. Like I know as much as these people now. I can write, I can create this. And so I started in 2014 and haven't looked back.
Wow. That's amazing. Have you ever heard of Hannah Bronfman, by the way? HB Fit.
Love her.
girl.
Sure have. Love her.
Okay. Yes. Okay. It's giving wellness girly realness. Yes. When I tell you, I am so obsessed with Hannah Bronfman because I've been following her since probably 2014. And so I watched her whole journey, and she, I kind of love to describe myself as like a fitness nomad, where it's like, I want to be a part of everything, but attached to nothing, like commitment wise, in terms of I want to do Tracy Anderson. Girl, you know Tracy Anderson?
Oh, I sure do.
Okay. I want to do Tracy Anderson. I want to do solid core. I want to do everything. Yep. And Han is the only person that I know that, like, it's almost like she has a membership everywhere. And that really, really fascinates me. So I thought that was really, really funny. So, okay. So you're starting this blog. Now, what is your experience in blogging? Did you go to school for this? Like, how did you just decide, I'm going to build a website? What was that like?
Yeah. So my background, I went to school for business and communications. I actually wanted to be a journalist when I was younger. That was what I either wanted, like the Devil Wears Prada vibe, or I wanted to be Oprah, which, I mean, honestly, I still want to be Oprah. And I think that has lended itself well to the work that I do now, because I've kind of created that sort of platform for myself. But that was what I wanted. However, when I was in school and I took out a lot of debt to be in school, I looked up how much journalists made and what that career trajectory looked like. And I was like, oh, honey, no, I have all these loans. I have all these things. This entry-level journalist salary is not going to work. And so I ended up going the corporate route, and I worked in corporate communications for several years. And so I think with that background, it definitely helped with writing and crafting messaging and media training and learning how to deliver a message and deliver a point. But a lot of it has also been just being self-taught and trying and throwing spaghetti at the wall.
Wow. Les, can I just say how eerily similar that was to my journey? I'm actually scared because I don't think you and I talked about this. So literally, I went to school for business communications and journalism because I wanted to be a journalist. I thought I wanted to be a news anchor. I'm obsessed with Oprah Winfrey. She's my aunt in my head, and that's my family. Yes. And a guy from Fox came to my school and he said, you don't want to do this. You're not going to make near as much money as you think you're going to make. I looked at the salary and I said, why does some of the starting salaries start at $25,000? Like all the crazy numbers that I've never even seen in my life. And I'm like, no way. It made me switch gears. I said, I need to do something more social media adjacent where I can express my personality and I can also, you know, maybe hopefully get into something more mainstream. So that story you told, that's literally exactly my story of why I was like, like maybe I should try and switch things up a bit. And it's interesting though, because for me, I didn't even get the chance really to go the corporate route. I mean, at a certain point I was working at a private health insurance company and I thought, okay, this is what I want to do. I ended up getting hired at Newsday after I had that job, and I didn't really like it, the health insurance job. The weirdest thing happened where, for whatever reason, I was supposed to do the background check. They told me I was hired and they never got back to me. A couple months later, my YouTube channel took off. So I didn't even question it. I just went along with it. But I had this whole idea in my head of, okay, I'm going to go this route. And it's not even like I was going to Newsday, like starting out doing something that was even adjacent to what I went to school for. I was like in my mind plotting how I was going to work my way up, you know, from sales and get me in front of that camera. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
So
something
like that. So that's really fascinating. So I often find that, for instance, like I went, when I was in school, I did take a couple courses on building a website, things like that. And girl, I still can't build a website, you know? So when you started the website, did you have someone like mentoring you, or you just was like, you Googled like, how to build a website? And you just like, what does that actual process look like?
Yeah, pure YouTube university. Yeah, everything that I learned was self-taught, either from Google, from YouTubing. I would look at the blogs and the websites that I really loved, and I would study them. A lot of bloggers at that time would have, you know, blog posts talking about how they started their websites and the mm-hmm. steps they followed. And so I would follow that and kind of tweak it. But yeah, it was sheer self-taught and wow. diving deep. And honestly, it was the same thing for my podcast. I didn't know anything about podcasting either and went deep into how can I find as much information as possible and hit the ground running.
Oh my gosh, I love that. You know what? Speaking of your podcast, that's perfect because we're about to switch gears and talk about that. Now, I want to know, what was the transition like in going from blogging to podcasting? Like, did you hit a certain number or goal in the blogging world? Were you making money off of blogging and then you translated that into podcasting? What does that look like?
Yeah. So I was not making money off of blogging. At that time, I was still pretty heavily in the fitness space because I was also a personal trainer. I was creating a lot of fitness content. So I was making money on social media. And then I also had an online personal training business where I had clients who I would train online. I had my little fitness app that I would update with new workouts every month. And so that was how I was making money from my business. And I got incredibly burned out. I just hit this wall where it was like, I was sick of fitness. I was sick of talking about fitness. The hard thing about being a trainer, especially when you're training women, because our bodies are just always such a thing, working with clients, it really triggered a lot of body image issues that I had previously had. And I was having a hard time kind of keeping my head above water and not getting sucked into that. And I knew that I didn't want to professionally be in fitness anymore. So I'd actually stopped. I'd stopped for several months, stopped with blogging, stopped with content. I was still doing a little bit on social media here and there. And I had just fully taken a break from it. And when I took that break, I was getting, you know, messages and emails and DMs from people being like, hey, Les, I know you're taking a break, but when you're not posting, I don't see many other Black women in my feed, you know, talking about wellness. I mean, even Hannah Bronfman, as amazing as she is, has a lifestyle that most of us do not have. So I think I was that very much regular Black girl doing wellnessy things that it felt like was kind of missing at that time. And so I was like, huh, I wonder if I can introduce my audience to the other kind of regular wellnessy Black women that I know so that all the pressure is off me because I just don't really want to do this anymore. And in that instant, it was like a download, clear as day, start a podcast, name it Balanced Black Girl, interview Black women in wellness. And so the second I got that idea, I immediately went to Amazon, ordered a microphone, started building out my now website, and the podcast launched 10 days later.
Wow. So yeah. Did you know, like, were you listening to podcasts prior to starting your podcast?
Yeah, I'd been an avid podcast listener probably since about 2013, 2014. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That is mm-hmm. something else because I see this is why I love having conversations like this because just hearing everyone's journey is so interesting. Because for me, when I started mm-hmm. mine, I did not listen to any podcast really like that. I mean, I've heard of the term mm-hmm. like podcast, you know, but I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And how I got started on it was just as simple as, or as vain, I should say, as, hey, we like your voice. You should start a podcast. So, you know, you seem like someone that'll mm-hmm. be cool on radio to listen to. And that's how I started. Yeah. But it's just, I love your process because one, even just like knowing you in the way that I do in the short time that we've known each other, you're such an intentional person. Guys, I have mm-hmm. to say, Les really is like a balanced Black girl. Like she really, really is.
And no pun intended.
Literally. And we found out we're like the same sign, but like switch. So I'm a Taurus and I'm a Leo moon. And Les is a Leo and a Taurus moon. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this mm-hmm. is literally crazy because we get along so well, like genuinely, like she really is exactly the same as she presents online in person. Can we just talk about that for a moment? I just a little mm-hmm. sidebar. Yeah. Have you ever met people, not naming any names, of course, but have you ever met people where it's like anticlimactic, where you meet them in person? It's like, oh man, like that was a little bit of a disappointment. Have you ever had an experience like that?
You know, I think I don't have any specific experiences that are jumping out at me. I'm sure that I probably have, But when I think about experiences like that, I also think, like, what expectations am I placing on people? Who am I expecting somebody to be? And is it fair for me to be disappointed that someone doesn't live up to expectations that I created? Because on the internet, a lot of what we're doing is not fake, but it is a character. There are sides of ourselves that we share, but nobody shares the whole 360 because that's impossible to do. And so for a lot of people, if they have an online presence, it's because they are showing this specific facet of them. But I think sometimes when we get disappointed with what we see in real life, it's because we are placing expectations on people and we're not giving them space to just be who they are.
Right. And I love that you mentioned that because it's so important to be objective. Now, listen, I may be a little biased because we got some Taurus and Leo in us. So I of course, I agree with your sentiment to 100%. And it's interesting because when you do meet people and, you know, you don't even realize that you're the one placing this expectation. You know, I recently heard a story that someone was telling me where her family used to work with like Chris Rock and stuff. And she ended up going to one of his daughter's birthday parties a couple years ago. And I was like, oh my God, what was he like? Because in my head, I was thinking, was he cracking jokes? And she was like, no, actually, he was pretty quiet. And I said, you know what? I'm glad that you got to see that because it checked me where I'm like, man, I was expecting him to be this funny character myself. And she's sitting here saying like, no, he was actually really quiet and he's around family. And then I said to myself, well, why would he literally be cracking jokes 24/7 like he is on TV in front of his family? Yeah. He should be allowed the space to just be whoever he actually is. So that makes a lot of sense. So, okay, back to you and the podcast and everything. So you said you were listening to podcasts and that's what pretty much inspired you. Now, how did you start to build traction? Because a lot of the times people say, you know, oh, you can monetize your blog, do all these different things. Where was your audience funneling from?
Yeah. So when I started podcasting, I was pretty fortunate that I did already have a bit of a built-in audience. I didn't have a huge audience, but at that time I did have blog readers. I had, you know, I was bringing in decent, probably around 50,000 page views a month. So not anything like crazy high, but a decent blog following. And I had probably about 10,000 followers on Instagram at the time that I started the podcast. So I did have a base of people who were already following me and who probably would have been interested in following me, you know, each new venture that I did. So I do think that that helped with some of the initial traction of the podcast was that I wasn't fully starting from zero. I had a little bit of a base community. But the biggest thing was just consistency. I mean, being super duper consistent and creating a schedule and sticking to it and not ghosting my audience, because when you take care of your audience, they'll take care of you. I mean, the number one way that people learn about new podcasts is word of mouth. Like, podcasts don't have algorithms like Instagram or like TikTok where you can be served new content. People have to directly go to it. And the main way people will directly go to something is if their friend sends it to them and says, hey, listen to this podcast. I think you'll like it. So when you show up for the audience you have, they will help you kind of grow to your future audience as well.
Oh, Les, you are just, oh my gosh, you, man. Okay. Where do I begin? First of all, that was a flawless answer. And I 1000%, of course, agree with you, because here's the thing, you know, one thing that I always mention to people is I call it being a person of interest first. Now, for us, yeah, there may be a little bit of strategy implemented here and there in terms of just the logistics of things, right? But there's a huge difference between people that are only podcasters, which you and I weren't only podcasters. You had a blog, you had a following on your Instagram. And it's so funny when you mentioned you had 10,000 followers. That's literally the exact number I had before I started my YouTube channel. That's another thing we have in common. So I just find it to be very fascinating because I imagine it would be very hard to kind of start from zero. This is why I really stress the importance of being what I call a person of interest, because you kind of already have that audience as a soundboard to see what it is that they would want. And so it is more encouraging, let's be honest, because you know you're not really just like speaking to nobody, you know what I mean? So our strategy is going to be a lot different, or what that process is going to be like looks a lot different for us. And by the way, I want to say 50,000 page views, girl, that is not, I love 50,000. I thought you were going to say a couple hundred. She said, I had 50,000. It wasn't anything crazy, but like how did you even get that? Was there like, you know, how there's so many different things on the back end, like SEO optimization, mm-hmm. like all these different things. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a process I have zero knowledge of. How do you get an audience, or did that come from your Instagram? How do you get an audience on a blog?
A lot of it is definitely SEO. So for listeners who may not be familiar with the term SEO, it stands for search engine optimization. And basically that's a fancy term for creating content that's going to show up in Google. Like, if you're creating content on the internet, and honestly, this goes for social media too, because a lot of social media platforms are their own search SEO engines. Like YouTube is an SEO engine. If someone types in a question into Google or into YouTube, you want your content to be what pops up. So SEO is basically understanding what are people searching for and how can my content answer their questions so that it pops up when they're searching for it. Also back then, blogging was just a lot more popular in general. So I would do a lot of collaborations with other bloggers, either guest posts on other blogs, or there's this term called backlinking where you link to another website and have them link to you, which also helps you get kind of some SEO juice. SEO content is like my corporate job. So I now have I've had to learn about a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of it is around creating content that people want and that people are searching for, and making sure that your content is the answer to someone's question.
Oh, I love that. And honestly, Les just dropped serious gems for those of you that are listening to this, because that's literally the secret formula. That's the tea. Mm-hmm. And it's very important. And so that's why it's always fascinated me. Like, I just looked up the term yesterday called copywriting to try and figure out mm-hmm. what that is. I may be getting this wrong, but it's basically creating like persuasive writing that usually links to some sort of call to action. It's a specific style mm-hmm. of writing. And that's what copywriting is.
Yep, exactly.
Yes, Google, yes. Because for the longest time, I'm like, have I been copywriting this entire time on my Instagram captions? And I'm like, no, Aisha, you absolutely have not. That is not copywriting. Because I didn't have any like call to action or anything. It wasn't persuasive writing. It was like, yeah, I look good, and what do you got to say about it? Like, that's not copywriting. You know what I mean? Okay. So, all right. So you got the blog, you got the podcast now. Now, in terms of social media, you and I briefly were speaking about this when we were in Vegas. What does your journey look like? Because everyone's journey looks so different in the social media space. We can all do things that are adjacent to each other. But how did you start mm-hmm. to monetize on your platforms? Now, this is such a long-ended question, but I know you mentioned to me trauma around money before. So mm-hmm. before we go into anything else, I kind of want to dive into that. What did you mean when you said that to me? Like trauma around money?
Yeah. I think money trauma is very prevalent for a lot of people. In me, how that has presented is this desire to like hold on to money so tightly. For some people, it could mean like money slips through their fingers and no matter how much they make, they just can't seem to keep it. But money trauma is essentially any experience you've had that really makes your relationship with money uncomfortable, whether you feel like you can never have enough or you can't keep it, or you feel overwhelmed and you don't know how to manage it. A lot of it relates to our upbringing and just how we were either taught or not taught about money. I think not taught is probably more prevalent for a lot of us. That's what a lot of people say. And it's just any experience you've had that makes your relationship with money maybe something you need to pay a little more attention to.
Okay. So I'm going to dive a little deeper. I want to know your money trauma story. Can you get into that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think my money trauma story is probably pretty similar to a lot of people's, where it is growing up not having a lot of money and seeing the adults in your life be really stressed out and feeling pretty hopeless in that. And I had very young parents and my parents are amazing. They were also really young when they had me, teenagers. And so with that, you know, they didn't go to college and get like the highest earning jobs. And at this point, I think that they've gotten to a point where they're doing well for themselves, all things considered, but they didn't get a lot of the opportunities that I had. So there wasn't a lot of money to go around. And then there also wasn't financial education from their parents about what to do when you have it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I saw a lot of spending. I didn't necessarily see the best money management. And then I saw them constantly being stressed about money. And usually I think when we grow up and we see those things, we either go one of two directions. We either repeat it or we become overly like anxious, hold on to everything. And that's what I did, is I became like a super saver, super anxious about money, not letting myself spend anything, not letting myself like enjoy life at all. Cause I'm always afraid that like something's going to happen and we're not going to have any money and that it's up to me to like have all the money. And so that's something that I honestly still work through. And over the past probably year or so, I've made a lot of progress around just letting myself be able to enjoy things and like, maybe I can take care of myself. Maybe I can get my hair done sometimes and it's not going to be the end of the world. And I'm not going to send myself into financial ruin if I don't save like every penny. Like maybe I can go out to dinner sometimes and, you know, and everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. But it's really been a bit of a process to get there.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for sharing that story. Because first of all, like your background, you're in your apartment right now. Mm-hmm. You guys can't see this. I'm so sorry for you, but, it looks beautiful. And honestly, I can just tell you, not only are you so educated and truly genuinely balanced, no pun intended. I think it's beautiful because you turned it into something really good. And, mm-hmm. you know, I agree with you. We all do have some sort of trauma around money. And to be honest, even when you mentioned, you know, your parents maybe not having being taught the financial literacy, so to speak, I agree with you. Even for me, you know, my parents and whatever their journey is, like, I wasn't taught that literally at all. And I do remember specifically where, and I'm still working through it, girl. Okay. Can I just talk about mm-hmm. that?
Oh, we all are. It's never ends.
Yeah. And it's very overwhelming. And sometimes I find myself as it pertains to like financial literacy and things, because I do want to learn more about it and even taxes and things like that. Mm-hmm. How does it even work in terms of what it is that we do? Like, that has been like the number one thing for me. Yeah. It is so difficult to find people that understand taxes from an influencer perspective. You can't just go to the average tax person because they don't know what would be considered a tax write-off or not. This is my own personal question for you. So I want to know, like, how did you learn about the whole taxes thing, and do you have like an Excel spreadsheet, or are you using like Rocket Money or some sort of app?
Yeah. So there's two answers that I want to give here. Don't let me forget. The first one, in talking about more of kind of the influencer kind of entrepreneurial side, is that I think understanding money is one of the most important things that we can do for ourselves, whether we're an influencer, whether we're an entrepreneur, whether we have a 9-to-5, whether we stay at home. I think it is up to us to make sure we understand money. And I think sometimes we can want to let ourselves off the hook in terms of accountability of what our parents didn't teach us, or what accountant didn't teach us, or what school didn't teach us. But right now, the time that we're in here in 2023, the year of our Lord, 2023, mm-hmm. we have access to every piece of information that we could possibly have. And not knowing or saying who didn't teach us what is completely valid. I understand. And it's also not an excuse to not handle your business. Mm-hmm. There are so many books, there are so many podcasts, there are so many creators, there are countless resources under the sun that can really help us. And I think sometimes we kind of have our blinders on and we don't want to know. And I think really taking accountability and taking responsibility for our learning is super important. That's just me on my soapbox. And I'll get off and I'll actually answer the question. But I do think in terms of understanding our finances as creators, it's really important to work with professionals who understand these types of businesses. So working with a CPA who specifically works with independent contractors and creatives, there's actually a lot of people like that. If you search for like accountants for creators, accountants for influencers, those are people who understand SEO. And when you, if you were even type that into Instagram, I bet you could find accountants pop up who that is their specialty and they know what it is to help you write off and how to manage that. I work with an accountant who works with creators and independent contractors and other podcasters who has really helped me manage my business finances. And so for me, I don't particularly have a spreadsheet. I have a bookkeeper who helps me track all of my business finances every month. And he tracks what comes in and what goes out and shares those reports with me every month. I do have business bank accounts. So all of the money that I make from content is completely separate from my own money, separate bank, separate everything. So the business finances are purely their own. And that's what my accountant and bookkeeper manage. And I manage it with them. And I'm also in there checking every day. Like I don't just let them manage it. I very much take responsibility for what's there, but we're all there to kind of cross check one another. And so between our bookkeeping software and me just staying really on top of my accounts, I would say that's how I manage the business finances side of things. And then from like a personal finance side of things, I get a lot of people ask me like, what is the first step to either saving or creating a budget? Or I had $100,000 of student loan debt that I paid off last year. And I talked about that on social media. So I would get a lot of questions about that. And what was most helpful for me was understanding my behavior around money. So I actually didn't have some detailed spreadsheet or some detailed plan. I was just constantly checking in with myself and with my money. I knew exactly how much was coming in. I knew exactly how much was going out. I knew where it was all coming from, where it was all going. And I was able to manage it because I was always, always looking at it. And I think that is the stuff that we get afraid to do. We think we need some complicated spreadsheet and then we get overwhelmed by the spreadsheet and we forget about it. When it's like, really, girl, you just need to check your accounts every day. And it's like, okay, if you spent a little too much going out to dinner, that's totally fine. Maybe dial back the Zara budget a little bit. It's cool. Like it doesn't have to be this big thing, but I think by being super visible with what we're doing and really not looking to other people to solve that for us, it has just been one of my biggest learnings. And once I understood that, it really changed my relationship with money.
Wow. Oh my goodness. So many great points you made there. One being right as it's on the top of my head is looking. There was another YouTuber. I don't remember what her name was. Bria Jones. Bria Jones made a great video.
Yes, love her.
Yes. She's amazing. She was saying, listen, guys, like I hired someone like a financial planner or I don't even remember what the name was that she mentioned, but she was basically, it's a testament to everything that you were saying that rings true. And she said, one of the things that I used to do when I wasn't where I wanted to be was I would not even look at my account. I would just avoid it completely. And in that moment, I was like, girl, me too. So that was so profound where we build these money blocks and these fears because we don't even want to open it up. And when we have that sort of avoidance and we're building that wall against it, it's never going to be addressed. And that therein lies the problem. And then it's going to continue to repeat itself. So this is my next question too, is what does having a budget for that look like? Because let's be honest here, I personally live off the term of, I believe in the sentiment of it does take money to make money a lot of the times, depending on what the context is. And you do have to have some sort of budget to be able to pay these, you know, tax people, these financial planners, because I find it to be hugely beneficial. And sometimes people do get taken advantage of. Like I've known stories, unfortunately, where some people have trusted people to help pay with their taxes, things like that. And they weren't really handling the finances well, or maybe the people that they work with kind of have this mentality of like, how do you not know this? And it's like, well, that's why I'm paying you. So how did you, or when were you able, how soon into your social media journey were you able to say, okay, let me outsource this. Let me get a bookkeeper. Wow. So important. You're the only person that I've known that mentioned the bookkeeping side of it. Let me make sure I'm getting someone with the taxes. How soon into your journey were you able to afford something like that?
You know, I didn't start doing that until 2021 was when I hired a bookkeeper. Before that, I was doing my own bookkeeping just as a business finance major. It's like I knew how to do it. And before, when I couldn't afford to do it, I just had my own QuickBooks subscription and I would, you know, track everything there. But yeah, I would say it took some years. It took until 2021. So mm-hmm. However, when I started, you know, I started creating content in 2014, started doing a bit more monetization in 2017, but it wasn't until 2021 that it was truly like a well-oiled machine, and it takes time. But even during that time, even when I had no money, I was still learning about money. And that was one of the best things that I could have done for myself, because once I got money, I knew exactly what to do with it. Don't wait until you have money to learn how money works. Learn how money works now from wherever you're at. Learn how to manage what you have now, and then you will understand how to manage more.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's a word. Okay. Let the church say amen. Because it's so true. We just want to avoid these things and when I get it, then it's all going to come together. No, it's not.
No,
because how you do anything is how you do everything. And that avoidance is definitely translating into other areas of people's lives and they don't even realize it.
Yeah.
So I do find that it is important to acquire all of the financial literacy, the business acumen, so that when preparation meets opportunity, is that what it's called? What is that saying? You know what I'm talking about?
Preparation meets, luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Exactly. So you will be, when you have that moment where it's like, okay, now I'm bringing in the money that I want to bring in, things like that. Boom. So, wow. I completely understand where you're coming from. And I agree with that. So let's talk about like management, things like that, right? Who was the person, or you don't have to give any names, so of course, but what was the yes like for you where you were like, oh my gosh, this is it. I think I'm really going to start to really like live my dreams and monetize off of what it is that I love doing. What did that look like?
Yeah. You know, I'll be honest. I don't know if I've really had that moment yet where I feel like I'm truly living my dreams. I think I'm getting closer, and I don't know if I've had one big moment of yes, where it felt like all of a sudden, you know, things were a certain way. For me, it's been very, very gradual. Mm-hmm. It's been like little yeses along the way that have compounded. I would say, you know, around the 2019 to 2020 mark was when I truly felt like, okay, I think I've got something here. And that was 5 years after I started. I mean, a very long time. I was like, okay, I think I've got something here. And then 2021 was a really big turning point for me and my business. That was when my podcast really took off. That was when I, you know, hired my accountant, hired my bookkeeper, and really got things in order, set up payroll, actually started paying myself. I'd never paid myself before. All the money that I made just stayed in the business and just ran the business, but I had never actually paid myself until 2021. So I'd done 7 years of work and had never paid myself. And so I think kind of the turning point around that time has really helped me inch closer, but I still don't think I've had a moment yet where it's like, oh, I've made it. Mm-hmm. I'm here.
Wow. I love that. Thank you for being so transparent in that, because everyone's version of success or definition of success is different. Right.
Yeah.
And it's so important to figure out what that is and what that means to you. You know, so often in the scope of social media, as you and I both know, guys, numbers of social media does not equate to numbers in the bank. Okay. Let that be known. It absolutely doesn't. And it's so interesting because I know for me, before I started on social media, I've only been doing this for about 4 years now. And I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, like if someone has 100,000 followers, they must be making $100,000 or something. And you'd be shocked. Like sometimes, a lot of the times, it's really nothing of the sort. You have to have proper representation. And if you don't, at least some sort of, I guess, business acumen to learn how to pitch yourself and things like that.
Yep.
Did you have to learn how to pitch yourself before you started, before you have management? You do have management now, right?
I do now, yes. But that, I just got that like last year. Before then, I was pitching myself and doing inbound opportunities.
Wow. Okay. And so you just naturally learned as you went how to go about doing that, because I will be honest, guys. Like, the pitching thing, thank God. Can we talk about thank God for these like AI operated things where they have like pitches you can do on AI? Because I get so overwhelmed. Like, I honestly wrote down, like, I have something on my little desk and I wrote down all the companies I wanted to pitch to. And then I started telling myself, oh, no one's gonna, like, you know, take you seriously because you don't have representation. And so all these different things. And I got very discouraged and overwhelmed because it always feels like in the space of social media, you got to learn this and then this and then this, and you got to be everywhere. You got to be on TikTok, Pinterest, YouTube Shorts, YouTube, like all these different things. So it's so overwhelming when you're like a one man band. And at the very least, it's like, all I want is just like someone to like represent me and say, hey, like, we're going to pitch on behalf of so-and-so. So I find that very fascinating because I do find that you have found success in learning how to pitch yourself. I remember you and I were talking about this when we were in Vegas, that you are kind of grateful that you had that experience because not only did it build that self-esteem of how to pitch yourself, but also what you don't know does get exploited in this industry. Okay. What you don't know absolutely will hurt you. And so what, like, What was your first experience like where you were able to land like a good chunk of change? Like, what did that feel like? How did you, where did you even get the number from to even charge that? And it worked.
Yeah. Well, I had gotten a brand deal back in like, I think it was late 2020. That was the most I'd ever been offered for a single post. Like, the brand just offered this number. And I think it was like twice what I was charging. And when that brand offered that, I was like, well, this is my new rate. this is now that I know that a brand is willing to pay this and they're willing to just come out with it to pay me this much. Okay. This is the new standard. This is the new rate. But I think it is so important, even when we have representation, to still be very involved in the process because nobody is going to look out for you like you, even if they're getting their 10%, 20, whatever, you still have your own best interests at heart. And it is important to make sure that you don't get got. And I think sometimes for creators, we just want to be the creative and we kind of want to phone it in. And I think outsourcing is great, but I do think that understanding all parts of the business, even if we aren't experts in all parts of the business, are so important. And really with any industry, you are constantly having to learn new things. Yes, as creators, it's frustrating when there's new platforms and features and it feels like what we did before isn't working. But every industry is like that. With accountants, tax laws change every year, and every year they have to study and know what's up for taxes that year. I also am a content marketer for my job, and I work in SEO, and Google is constantly changing its algorithms. And so we constantly have to learn what's happening with the new Google algorithm, just like influencers have to learn what's happening with Instagram's algorithm. Doctors constantly, as new research happens, have to change the way they go through treatments and what medications. So it's, I think I had to really have a come to Jesus moment with myself as a creator when I was whining about having to do things differently. Having to do things differently is part of the human condition. We're all constantly having to learn new things and level up and do things differently. And when I learned how to see leveling up as an opportunity to grow my skill set and get better, as opposed to like whining about how Instagram changed their algorithm that week, because I was the queen of that, it really helped me. It helped me a lot. It helped me adjust my attitude and it helped me create better work because I constantly saw it as an opportunity to get better and to be better and to have skills that were even more marketable.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Like, I 100% agree with that. Like, you play back this entire episode, it's going to be, I agree. But it's so true because we have to adjust. That's a part of the human condition. You said it so perfectly, where we have to make these adjustments and seeing these improvements as opportunities instead of just whining about it. Like you said, that is so important and key to keeping the needle moving forward. Right. And, and not like victimizing yourself. Oh, you know, and I got to do this, I got to do that. Instead, it's, I get to do that. I get to do this. That's, you know, when you shift that inner talk, it really helps to shift your perspective and your mind. Now, I want to get into this real quick. You mentioned your current job. Now, I know you and I also spoke about this in Vegas. If you don't mind, can you get into having the job that you did? How or why do you choose to have another job? Do you feel like you have to have another job? Is there a goal that you have in mind where it's like, once I hit this point, then maybe I'll go full time? So technically, would you consider yourself to be a full time creator or no?
No, I still consider myself to be kind of a side hustle creator. I say I'm a side hustle creator who earns a full-time income. So I earn, you know, full-time money from creating, but it's not my full-time job. I do still have a like regular corporate 9-to-5 job. And for a couple of reasons. One, I mean, I live in Los Angeles and it is not cheap. Let me tell you, it's not cheap. And so I like to have a certain lifestyle. And if I had just one job, just my corporate job, or was just a creator, it wouldn't quite give me the cushion to have the lifestyle that I would like. So that's one reason. Another reason, benefits. You know, I'm a single woman over the age of 26. Healthcare is very real, and I like having a job that provides that. And then the other thing is that with creating, you know, all of the money that I earn comes from working with brands, whether that's working with brands on social media or podcast ads, which is incredible. Thinking about that as a job, it is amazing. I mean, I'm so grateful for that. And I've also been around and I've worked with enough brands and I've worked with brands long enough to know that that's not the most stable thing, especially when the economy gets a little shaky like it is right now. Oftentimes for a lot of brands, the first thing to go is a marketing budget. So things get a little tighter. I've seen brands start to pay creators less because their budgets go down. I've seen brands cancel contracts and not go through with a contract because they don't have the budget or they move in another direction. And so I don't feel comfortable having my full livelihood kind of relying on whether or not brands are willing to pay me or if they pay me on time, because that could be an episode in and of itself when the brands actually pay you.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a whole nother
net,
thing.
Net 1 year, all this nonsense. I digress.
I mean, yeah, I think that there's a lot of reform that could happen in the industry, but so for me, I would just want to diversify my income streams a bit more and have money coming in to my business just from other areas outside of brand deals before I would feel comfortable going full time.
Mm. Okay. So, and also I feel like given, you know, your background, things like that, having that safety, right? You know, for a fact that no matter what you do, you're going to make at the very least X amount from the corporate job that you have. What I find unique about your experience is that your corporate job actually feeds your other part-time/full-time salary job, you know, that you know, of social media.
Yeah.
I find that to be hugely beneficial. I, of course, don't know if that's other people's stories, but it definitely helps when there are parallels, you know, to that, like you mentioned the SEO optimization and things like that, that is great for helping your business. So it's very harmonious, all of the things that you're doing. So it really, really works well. I saw on Instagram, you like detailing how your day sort of went, how you do, like you wake up at like, what is it, 5 or 6 in the morning? And then you start your other job, like your corporate job, your full-time job at like 9-to-5. I was like, oh my goodness, like this girl is not playing any games. Like this is amazing. And it's probably almost 9 by you right now, right? Am I correct?
Gosh, girl, the time
is winding down. This just flew by. I'm really just enjoying myself. So I really just find that to be super inspiring, because I have to say, like, seeing other people tell their story and being so transparent about it, I agree with you. Like, to be honest, in my own personal journey, I am fortunate in the fact that I do work for my dad's church as well. So that's usually the case here. Like, can we really call a spade a spade? Like, working full-time social media, yes, like, I do have the ability to do that, but it's all about what I define as, okay, I'm comfortable to do that. And like you said, I live in New York. It is extremely expensive. The people that I grew up around, all of us still live at home for the most part, because that's just the culture here. And especially growing up where I have grown up, we want to be able at the very least to replicate what our parents have done for us. And if not, everyone likes nice things. You want to be able to have a certain lifestyle, like you said, and that's very important. And so having that safety net and not necessarily going the route of woe is me, I'm just going to keep on sulking in this if it's not working. It's very good to, you know, help yourself, because again, we are over the age of 26 and you can't be like, you know, come on, near 30 trying to use the same antics as you did when you were 18. You don't have that time and it's not realistic. And sometimes when we put all of our eggs in one basket, it really hurts us because we're so frustrated over like why that's not working. We're stuck on having a desired outcome in the way that we wanted. So we don't want to explore other avenues when after a certain age, especially, you got to pack it up and you got to say, okay, let me be proactive here. So I love that. That's,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love that that's something you're doing.
Yeah. And I mean, I've had a lot of moments where I get really discouraged because I don't know many people who are either doing what I want to do or envision who don't either have like financial support from their family or who don't have like a husband or a partner who can at least, again, almost be kind of like what my 9-to-5 is for me, where it's like maybe a little offsetting some income. Like a lot of people who are full-time will have other areas of support. And that's not to discount the work that they do, because you still do have to work to get there, mm-hmm. but it's like their work can take them a little bit further versus my work is going to help me break even. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things that could be so much better in our country, specifically with how we support people, making healthcare easier to get. The cost of living is just atrocious. And so many people don't have what they need to make ends meet. And it's not even an issue of like, they don't try harder, they victimize themselves. It's like they literally just don't have it. And I also understand what that's like because I've been there. And I think what's been most helpful for me is figuring out, okay, what do I have? How can I find some sort of solution from where I'm at? If I can't get from A to Z, how can I at least get from A to B? Mm-hmm. How can I at least look for a solution for this one problem to stay afloat here and let that continue compounding? And you know what? Yes, I am too old to be on my parents' health insurance. And you know, mm-hmm. if my parents had all the money in the world, I'm sure that they would love to financially support me while I live out my dreams, but that is not the reality of the mm-hmm. situation. So how can I do the best I can with the reality that I'm in now? And how can I be really solution oriented to create a better reality for myself in the future? And that's the way I like to think of it, but it is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you mentioned that. Like you said, there has to be a lot of reform that needs to be implemented into the space. And it is scary to think about the reality of the world and its financial current status right now. It is very alarming. And so it is definitely a scary thing. And I agree with you. Like if people, let's really call a spade here. Everyone that I know too, like I'm not going to lie, there was a certain point where I was like, do I need a YouTube boyfriend? Because it feels like everyone that I know when I look up to, they have a partner that's editing for them, helping them upload. Yep. They're so instrumental in their career. And then they have like the two yep. and incomes. They get to, you know, maybe they're splitting. I don't know what it is that they're doing, but it's help. And I'm like, I'm by myself. Like, you know, like, especially when I first started out, I was like, like maybe that's why I'm not where I want to be yet. Like just blaming it on all these external mm-hmm. circumstances, because it feels like for the yep. vast majority, that's what you're seeing. And so naturally mm-hmm. you sometimes, especially the younger you are and you're more impressionable, you want to kind of keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. So 100%. I mean, I understand exactly where you're coming from. And now looking back in hindsight, because I do know that everything absolutely happens for a reason, I know that all of the things that I have learned and acquired on my journey really helps me to, yeah, I had to get scrappy. And I'm sure all of us do in our own unique way, but it really helped to cultivate exactly the person I am right now and the people. Yeah. And then also when you mentioned going from A to B and not necessarily A to Z, being a connector is so important, right? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. That is the one thing that I can say that I've learned so much recently. And I opened my heart up to just attracting people. I'm the type of friend where let's say I speak to someone, I know what it is that you do. I'm going to say, you know what? I have a friend named Les. I think you should reach out to her. Here's her email. Here's her this. Let me introduce you guys because I want to point you in the right direction just because. I don't need any part of it, but it's just like that's the type of person I am, because to be honest, I would want someone to do that for me. And so if I can be instrumental in connecting someone else, no strings attached, I'm going to do that. And that's going to attract more opportunity to you, because it is true. Closed mouths don't get fed, but it is free. And in certain communities, I'm not even going to name any specifics, but in a lot of certain communities, they operate like that. Hey, you know, my boy Sal over here, he has a tire place. We don't do this over here, but they're pointing them in that direction. Connection is everything. Especially when you don't have necessarily the financial resources to do certain things all the time. There are ways. Yeah. And that's why it's like, who was your yes? It makes me think of, wow, all the people that were my yeses that pointed me in the right direction, that was like, hey, I'm going to open the door for you and I'm going to make space for you here. Come and join us. I am that person. And that's why even in my YouTube bio, it says, I'm just a girl trying to build a longer table and not a fence. Because there truly is room for everyone. So I want to conclude in asking you, you know, where do you see yourself in the next couple of years? What would your ideal dream life look like?
Yeah, I was actually just talking to a friend about this yesterday, and I'm in my early 30s, and I've been doing a lot of reflecting on my 20s, and my 20s were not good, honestly. And normally I try to be like really positive. And I think I've gotten to the point where it's like, I can be honest, my 20s were not good. I spent a lot of time in jobs and relationships and cities and spaces that just didn't serve me. And so right now where I'm at, kind of the first half of my 30s are really like creating that, having the experiences that I wanted to have earlier that I didn't get to have, and giving myself permission to do that. So it looks like a lot of travel, a lot of exploring new places, making new friends, having new experiences, being really creative, leveling up and just getting better, doing hard things to help me get better. That's what I really see the next couple of years of my life looking like. And I'm already starting and I'm really excited.
I love that, Les, because I know you mentioned even on Instagram, you're like, you know what? I'm going to get my hair done. Because it used to be like, you would think it's a waste or something like that. And honestly, like, I agree with you so much. That just highlights like our money traumas and things like that. What we choose to spend money on, feeling guilty for it. Like, should I acquire the budget to get my hair done? And doing this little thing for yourself and giving yourself the space and the permission to do that, it's going to translate in so many other areas of your life, as I'm sure it already has. Yeah. So I think that is so beautiful. And I really want to thank you for taking the time out to speak with me. And you are truly so special. You are so unique. And it is such a blessing to know you, to have met you. I am so happy that you and I met. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Balanced Black Girl, Les, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.